the Jordan River, about to cross over, about to hand it over to Joshua, who's going to lead them into battle, into the Canaan. Now we are on. All right. Okay, so this is his basically last time to encourage the people to do what's right, to listen to the Lord's commands, listen to his statutes. And he loves these people. He's kind of stood up for them, saved their life on a few occasions when God wanted to wipe them all out, start over with Moses. So if you care a whole lot about someone or a lot of people, and you have one last time to motivate them to love the Lord and do what the Lord says, this is Moses' kind of last time doing that. So that's the kind of the big overview of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is more than just the retelling of the law. It's sometimes kind of given that impression, Deuteronomy or Second Law. If you look at chapter 1, verse 5, it'll say that Moses expounded on the law. So this is not just Moses retelling the law. This is Moses teaching the people what the law is. So there's a big difference between reading the laws and explaining it. So that's kind of what we have here from chapter 1, verse 5. And it's an opportunity for us to know and learn the lawgiver, and that is God. So there's a lot that we can learn about him, his holiness, his love, his compassion. So it reminded me of Psalm 119, right? The longest chapter of the entire Bible. And what is that psalm about? Oh, how I love your law, right? And just, I think there's two verses out of 176 that does not mention law, statutes, testimony, commandments. So that's the mindset that I think we need to have going into Deuteronomy is, oh, how I love the law. It's my meditation all the day, all the night. Looking at chapters 1 to 4, is basically the introduction, I'll say, to the book. So just looking at that with me, and you're already there, so let me catch up to you. Chapters 1 through 3 is basically the history lesson, right? Starting in kind of Exodus 19, Mount Sinai, and God gives them the law, and they marched up to Canaan. They spied it out. They were ready to take it, and the 10 spies said, there's no way we can take it. There's giants. There's fortified cities. Caleb and Joshua said, no, we can take it. They listened to the 10, so they got 40 years in the wilderness. An 11-day journey took 40 years, right? Looked at that. So he kind of gives the history lesson. Okay, now we're up to the land again. What are you going to do? Don't be like your fathers, right? Conquer the land, trust in the Lord. So that's 1 through 3. God's given you victories. And then chapter 4 that Jacob did such a good job with last week. Appreciate a lot of time and effort went into him studying for that, which certainly showed. So chapter 4 is basically an encouragement to listen to God's law. And that's kind of his motivate. You really need to listen to the law. So it starts out just real quick, 1 through 4. Listen to the statutes, listen to the commands, so that you will live and take the land. I want us to remember that verse, because we're going to come full circle tonight and basically end with that same sentiment in chapter 5. Verse 2, don't add to, don't take away from the law. Learn the lesson from your fathers at Baal Peor. They did not listen to the word of the Lord. They did not obey it, and they got killed. So your law that you have is the best law ever. People, when they hear it, they're going to think, wow, y'all are such a wise people. Well, it's not them, it was God, right? So that, again, kind of shows the wisdom of God. And then chapter 4, 9 to 14, remember what happened at Mount Sinai or Mount Horeb. Give heed to yourself, keep your soul diligently. Don't forget what you saw and teach it to your sons and your grandsons. So that was a very important event. When God gave them the law, and remember their reaction is, Moses, you talk to God. If he keeps talking to us, we're going to die. So they understood finally the fear of the Lord. And notice verse 13, that he declared to them what? Chapter 4, verse 13. What did God declare? The covenant, which is Ten Commandments. Okay, so the covenant is the Ten Commandments. That plays into tonight's lesson. So remembering that is helpful. And then verses 15 to 20, make sure you don't worship any other image. You can't replicate God with an idol that has to be made by hands and can't talk and can't walk and all those things. So 21 to 24, watch yourself. Take heed. Don't forget the covenant. Because basically Moses says, I'm going to die. And I'm not going to be here to remind you, to keep reminding you, obey God. Do what he says. So I'm going to die, and y'all are going to cross over. So make sure you take heed, watch yourself. And he tells them in verse 25 to 31 what the future holds for them. Of course, Moses is not predicting this. This is what I think is going to happen. This is God telling Moses, this is what's going to happen. So after you've been in the land for a while, what's going to start happening? What are they going to do? Start worshiping idols, right? They're going to forsake God, and they're going to worship what people make with their hands. Then God's going to scatter you, leaving you few in number. You will serve God, the work of man's hands, that don't see, don't hear, don't eat, don't smell. That's what you're going to be into. Then eventually you'll turn back to God. You're going to want to listen to him. And he ends that section, verse 31, God is a compassionate God. He will not fail you, nor destroy you, or forget the covenant. Verse 32 to 40 is a very powerful section where he says, don't forget what God did for you in bringing you out of Egypt. Remember, he says things like, who has ever heard of such a mighty hand delivering you? I mean, nothing has ever been heard of or seen that God has done for you. Remember, there is no other God who rules over heaven and earth. So verse 40, so therefore, keep his commandments so that it will go well with you and your children. That's kind of the first speech that basically Moses is saying you really need to listen to the law. If you want to live, if you want to prolong your time in Canaan, make sure you obey God's law. So there, for 41 to 43, Moses set apart three cities to be the cities of refuge. I think we ended with that last week. And then 44 to 49, which we didn't get to, but I'll talk about just really briefly, is basically, I think, the introduction, if you will, to Moses giving the law. So I say the first four chapters are basically the introduction to the law. Do you see that, how I came to that conclusion? How the first three chapters are a history lesson, basically. Chapter four is motivation to do the law. This is why you need to pay attention, why you need to take heed, because it's so important that you follow the law. Then, what is he going to do in chapter 5? Start explaining the law. Yeah. So, kind of 1 through 4 is kind of our introduction to the book, if you will. So, verse 44 and 45, this is the law of that Moses spoke to Israel when they came out of Egypt. And then 46 to 49 is basically the location of where Moses expounded and explained the law. And it kind of gives the time frame. This is after they defeated Sihon and Og. or not Sihon, that was the king of Sihon. Who did he defeat? Og and Magog, right? Something like that. So I just kind of give it, okay, this is after those victories, this is where we're at. Now we're excited, right? Now we're looking forward to Moses explaining the law, explaining the covenant. So where would you think, I know you know the question or the answer, where would Moses start? After saying in 1 through 4, especially chapter 4, God gave us the covenant. So where would you think is a good place for Moses to start explaining the law? Sorry. Okay, yeah, their relationship with God, and more specifically, the Ten Commandments, right? So that's where Moses starts. I think it's a reasonable, logical place for him to start after talking about the covenant, which is the Ten Commandments. Notice the progression in verse 1 of chapter 5. And Moses summoned all Israel and said to them, "Hear, O Israel, the statutes and the rules that I speak in your hearing today, and you shall learn from them and be careful to do them." Did you notice a progression in verse 1? What is it? Three steps, if you will. Good. Yeah, well, that's better in my notes. Hear them, learn them, and do them. That's a great way to say it. So learn, hear, learn, and observe. Can you hear something but not learn it? All those who have been in school say yes, right? that was me. I could hear all day, but I'd never registered. So that takes a little bit more effort. If you're going to hear something and really try to soak it in, try to really learn it. And then taking it one more step to observe it. You can learn something, but not put it into practice, right? So Moses is telling them, look, this is what you need to do with the law. You need to hear it, you need to learn it, and most important, you need to observe it. You need to do what it says. Chen?
When I was raised, I always told what I cannot do, but nobody ever told me why. And as I grew in knowledge of God, the grace of God, then I've seen that there's a purpose for everything. And if you truly love God, it's a joy to keep His laws. And this is basically a history lesson that Moses is trying to help them to see, remember. Somebody said once, I heard, that the only thing we learn from history is that we don't learn from history. And I think there's a lot of truth in this too.
Good.
So we need to fall in love with God.
Sure.
Relationship with God. And then it's a joy. It's not a labor to do His walls.
Yeah. The commandments are not burdensome. 1 John. Yes, Franco?
I think it's also important for us to understand when he says here, they had to heed and pay attention because they didn't have the written Bible or the written law itself.
Yes.
So just think of the attention they had to pay, so that when they went back to their homes or when they went back to the community, they would be able to now do those things because they've just kept it and absorbed it in their heart.
Excellent point. Yeah, most of them were not able to have a Bible in their home. They could look at, read, study for themselves. So it was much verbal, oral, passing down. So you really had to pay attention. And understand what was being said. Yes, sir?
Emphasis on be careful to obey.
Yes.
Which is said many times in Deuteronomy.
Yes. Be diligent. Careful. Yeah. Don't turn to the right or the left, as we'll see in today's chapter. Does this remind you of anything of make sure you not only hear what God says, but be sure and do it? A fantastic, best teacher ever said something like that, right? Not talking about me. Jesus said that on the Sermon on the Mount, right? At the very end of the sermon, those who are wise, those who hear and do. So the foolish man heard, but didn't do. So we must take that. Now, maybe a lot of parallels. Kind of the Sermon on the Mount kind of explains how we need to live, what a kingdom citizen looks like. So here, he who hears these sayings and does them is careful to observe. All right, so then 2 through 5 is basically God spoke this covenant to you. Let's go back to that scene that we already focused on a little bit in the last chapter. So he brings that up again. Verse 2, the Lord our God made a covenant with us in Horeb, or Mount Sinai. Not with our fathers did the Lord make this covenant, but with us, who are all of us here alive today. The Lord spoke with you face to face at the mountain out of the midst of the fire. While I stood between the Lord and at you at that time to declare to you the word of the Lord, for you were afraid because of the fire, and you did not go up into the mountain. He said, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. So then we'll get into the Ten Commandments after that. So 2 through 5, he brings up the scene again where God first gave the covenant. The Ten Commandments to their fathers, to Israel. Was everyone at that scene that Moses is talking to? No, right? A lot of them, I'd say the majority, maybe, were probably born in the wilderness, right? And there, that generation, 20 and above, died, every one of them. And then, now they're allowed to enter into the Canaan land. So, what is Moses doing for this generation that may not have been there or may have been too young to maybe remember what was going on in that event? What is Moses' point in 2 through 5? Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. That this is a covenant that was given to your father, but it is to you. This is God's covenant for all generations. So I think he wants them to picture that scene at Mount Sinai. And you remember what happened when God was speaking the covenant to the people? What was their reaction to the thunder and the lightning and the smoke and the quaking of the mountain? Remember what they wanted more than anything? Moses, you do it. We'll go over here. and hopefully you've read chapter 5, was that an okay response on the people's part? Yes, yeah. God says they have spoken correctly. Because why? What did that do to them? What did God help them with by letting them hear his voice and witness that scene? What did that put in them? The fear of the Lord, absolutely, yeah. So they finally said, whatever Moses, whatever God tells you to do, we will do it. Because if he keeps speaking to us, we're going to die. So they feared the Lord. They were in awe of him. And I think Moses wants that reaction or that mindset with these people that he's talking to here. God spoke to you face to face. Moses wants them to feel like they were on the mountain to get that desired effect. Verse 6, I am the God who brought you out of Egypt. So this is hopefully reminds us of what Moses just said. In chapter 4, 32 to 40, remember that section? No one has ever heard of anything like this. No one has heard or seen anything so mighty and powerful, what God has brought you out of Egypt. So this is the God of action. This is just not a God of generalities. Based on what God did for you in bringing you out of slavery, this is how you should behave. That spirit of gratefulness, that spirit of we are so unworthy, of God doing that for us, whatever you say, we will do. So Moses wants, we know God by what he has done. He's a God of love, God of action. So then that gets into the Ten Commandments. So a lot of you kind of know the outline, or if you will, of the Ten Commandments. What are the first four commandments about? Okay, and the next six, relationship with each other. So love the Lord your God with all your heart, love your neighbor as yourself, with all this contains the law and the prophets. So it's kind of a way to divide. That helped me kind of remember the Ten Commandments a little bit better. No, there are four about God. There's six about your neighbor. So starting out, verse 7, you shall have no other gods before me. I think he puts them in an order that he does on purpose. So he is protecting his identity. There should be no rivals to God. He needs to be first and only. He is the Lord. He is one. There needs to be no other God before him. And then I'll do the first four and let you comment. The second one, 8 through 10, you shall not make yourself an idol. So the first one's protecting God's identity. What would this one be protecting? This would be protecting God's... What would you insert? I'm sorry? Yeah, exactly. So protecting his image. And so the idea, how can someone create an image of God? Impossible, right? God is living. God is active. God has emotions. God has the ability to listen to prayer. God watches his creation. How can you make something like that? So don't make an image. And remember, that's exactly what they did right after they heard God on Mount Sinai. Give them 40 days, and what are they doing? They're already messing up many of the Ten Commandments by making a god. And then he gives them motivation to obey this command. What is the negative if they decide to not, if they decide to build an image? What will God do? Sure. So going to punish to the third and fourth generation. But if you do what God says, what will God do? Yes. Which one is bigger out of those two, you think? God's love, isn't it? Right? God's love to the thousands compared to the third and fourth generation. So he's pointing out God is a loving God. God is not waiting for you to mess up so he can punish. God wants you to obey because God wants to bless you. So that is super important. As they are listening to these commands, it's important for them to understand who the lawgiver is. He's a God of love, compassion, and really wants them to do what he says. The third one, do not take the name of God in vain. So protecting his name, who he is, his character. What does it show when someone uses the name of God flippantly? Or really not even thinking twice about it. What does that show? No respect. What else? Good. Okay, so yeah, bringing down God to more attainable level or more equal with us. Yeah, it's just anything but fearing him, having that awe that God is so great and amazing and awesome, and you just kind of use his name flippantly that we hear a lot today. Seems like many people just use God's name in vain without thinking twice about it. And that's something that we need to make sure we help people with. Yes?
I have heard that the word there, the take, the name, has also been translated in other places as bear, like to bear or to carry.
Uh-huh.
And that kind of, if you think about it that way, it kind of lends to the fact that we are wearing God's name as his children. And that kind of gives it a whole new perspective of, like, if we're bearing his name, we better do it right.
Sure. Yeah, and speaking to his people, they are the ones out of everybody that should be respecting and awe and worshiping God. If we are not respecting God, and if we're just kind of flippantly talking to God or using his name in vain, boy, that just speaks terrible things about us. That's very important. So a person who does this will surely be punished. He will not get away with doing that. And then number four on the list, 12 to 15, is keeping the Sabbath holy. So this is protecting God's day, if you will. So God commanded them to have a day of rest. We learn, and I won't try to do this a lot, but we learn in Leviticus 23, verse 3, this was also a holy convocation day. And I was like, what in the world does that mean? Basically, it's a day where they were to worship and study about God's word. So it's not only a day of rest, it was an opportunity for them to draw closer to him. So that's another aspect of God giving them this day. And who was to get rest on this day? It doesn't matter, right? Slave, male, female, it just kind of goes down the list. That's just a very emphatic way of saying there shall be absolutely no work for anyone that they need to take that day. Why would this be difficult? Or why would someone not take this day of rest? What would be maybe some motivation to not take the Sabbath?
Why not think of it as laziness that you didn't get your work done on the first 6 days?
Okay.
Greed.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think we saw this like in the book of Nehemiah. Remember where there are people trying to do business with them? Nehemiah had to shut them out, get them out of Jerusalem. This is a Sabbath day. We're going to keep it holy. So it certainly is the idea of we're going to be content. We're not going to work. We're not going to try to get more money. And what does he bring up in this section that would be a good reminder and help them be grateful for this day? Yeah, I doubt very seriously the slave owners that were beating them. It's like, you know what, I'm tired of beating you. I'm going to let you have a day off. You've worked real hard. No, it was a 7-day-a-week torture. So I'm going to allow you that day of rest. So it should produce in them a day of thanksgiving to God. Work can easily become an idol, right? The love of money, the love of gaining more so that I can have more, materialism. So that's the one that we need to think about. Okay, thoughts and comments with those first four about our relationship with God. Yes, sir.
Well, even not just being materialistic, but Even for people that were more worked for more hand to mouth kind of existence.
Yes.
That requires trust in God. That you know, if I don't work, I don't eat.
Yes.
And if I take a day off, how am I going to eat? Well, you got to trust God.
Good.
You got to do everything you can to make sure you can do that. But God's not going to let you go hungry if you're following his commands.
Good point. And how would this generation especially have learned that lesson in the wilderness? Yeah, right? You collect it 6 days. Don't collect it on that seventh. Bad things are going to happen. Guess what they did, right? Collect it on the seventh. So they should have learned that lesson. But that's an excellent point. It creates trust in the Lord. Any other comments through the first four? Yes, sir.
It's just interesting that he uses slavery as the reminder, because back in Exodus 20, when he talks about using the Sabbath, he doesn't use slavery because he references God rested at the end of creation. And then now, at this kind of rereading of the commandments, he substitutes that and just says, for God rested, you know, or for, he uses the slavery thing instead of God resting. So I just thought that was interesting that he switched those.
Good point. So yeah, the parallel, I didn't say that, parallel text would be Exodus 20, right? Kind of the first reading or of the law that God gave them. So that is interesting. That's good work. Okay, let's look at the last six here, moving on to kind of the laws about our relationship towards one another. The first one, honor your father and mother. So God set up a family structure where the parents are in charge and the children are to obey and respect their father and mother. Do you ever outgrow this command? That's correct. how do you not outgrow it? Seems like when you're a child, you have to obey, but then when you're out of the house, you're fine. So how does this command keep with you? Out of the house, if you will.
Always just doing what they tell.
Okay, good. So there's a lot more than respect and just obeying what they say.
God, because you don't know he's there. But he is there all the time. Your parents, even when they're dead, are to be respected.
Sure. Good. Reminded me of 1 Timothy 5, right? Verse 8. Talking about the widows, if their own family members are not taking care of them, what does Paul say? You are worse than an unbeliever, right? So it requires us to make sure we take care of them, respect them, and that we never outgrow that command. The second one there, you shall not... Oh, go ahead.
Actually, I think it might be good to... We're going to look at that through the lens of the New Testament. Also, think about that some of Paul's primary instruction to Timothy was how he treat older men, older women as mothers and fathers. And so, like we talk about this in terms of honor your parents, and I think that's important. But I wonder if perhaps in that culture, the idea of honoring your father and mother was not just about your parents, but honoring people who came before you and were older than you. And Paul highlights that to Timothy, accentuating for us that whether or not that's what he meant in the Old Testament, that's what he means in the New Testament. And so the primary commandment for them was to honor your father and mother. And Paul's telling Timothy that it's a lot of governance over how we should treat relationships of our brethren.
Good.
As well.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point. Yes, sir.
The law also mentions that as far as honoring the
elders.
Gray-headed.
The gray-headed.
Could you provide an example?
I don't want to be in that category. I could be 95.
Absolutely. We have a lot of mothers and fathers in the faith, right?
We read honor your father and mother, we only think about it from the child's point of view.
Right.
That is a bigger challenge to the parents than it is than the kids. Who is the one who sets the tone for honoring father and mother is the parent. And so parents, you know, you sit there and go, well, look at my terrible kids. Well, okay, maybe you did everything, but maybe you let them get away with murder. And that's the reason they're terrible kids. You never made them suffer the consequences for their disobedience. You never really laid the ground rules for that and stuck with it. Well, the hardest thing for parents to do is be consistent and disciplined. We get worn down, and you know, pretty soon we're like, oh, booey. Yeah, I'm tired.
Sure.
But that's the kind of thing we can't do. And when you realize that he warned in Exodus 20, 22 and 23, that if there was not that honor, and look at it even later in Deuteronomy,
right,
stoned to death.
Right.
And so if I don't want my kid to be stoned to death, and especially today, if I don't want my child to end up lost in eternity, this is a huge commandment for me. And,
yeah,
and Ephesians 4 tells us, or 6 tells us, this is the first commandment.
With promise.
Well, wait a minute. I thought idolatry was the first commandment. Well, this is the foundational commandment. It's right in the middle of all of this. It's foundational for everything that happens in a person's life. It has to start here.
Yeah.
We parents are watching the demise of our country because that didn't take place. And as I was in the 70s and 80s, I'm going, man, I don't want to see what's going to happen to the kids that I'm watching getting raised with. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Yes, sir.
You know, then the family was the entire social support structure for the elderly. And today, if we act like we lived in and take care of their parents and show them the respect, that's the best example our children can see, is the way that we take care of them when they're elderly. You know, and today, if you make a lot of money, it's awful easy to, you know, put them in a home somewhere. But that's not the lesson that our children need to see. Our children need to see that, yeah, when you die for them when the kids are little, and they die for you when you're old. I mean, that's the way it is.
Yeah.
When they see that in
yeah.
a parent.
Are we modeling that behavior?
When they see that modeled behavior
yeah.
in a parent toward their grandparents,
yeah.
it's lessons.
Yeah, good. All right, let's try to get through a little bit more. So don't murder, 17. God is the one who gave life. Life belongs to God. You're not allowed to take it away. God has laws, like was mentioned, for the death sentence. But that is obeying God's law. That's what obeying what God tells you to do. You're not allowed to just do that because you don't like someone. They're getting on your nerves. No, that's not exactly what God had in mind. Yes, ma'am.
Footnote in my book says that the Hebrew word also covers causing human death through carelessness or negligence.
Okay.
I haven't done a word study on that. I'm just reading the note. But that puts it in a more broader category than I had assumed it was.
Good.
I can't do.
Huh?
I don't think so.
You don't think that's what the Hebrew word says?
Because he gives for accidental death, you're not put to death.
But it says, I have the same thing, carelessness or negligence. So it's not the idea of an accidental death. It's the idea of you didn't do what you were supposed to be doing, and that
yeah.
caused the death. Meaning like I leave my kid in the car on a hot day.
Okay.
That's negligence under our
law. Okay, I was
okay, good.
Yeah. No, it wasn't accidental. They're saying like you didn't do what you should have done, and that caused a death.
Be careful to obey. Be diligent. Make sure you're... Yeah, good. Yeah, that does help. Kind of put it in to make sure we're doing that. Okay, so then what would be the opposite of murdering? it helped me to kind of think of, okay, well, this is what I shouldn't do. Well, what should I do? Well, I should obviously love, right? Be patient, be kind. Do not commit adultery. Marriage needs to be protected, honored among the husband and wife. Opposite would be work on your relationship. There's going to be difficulties. Work through them. Love one another. Grow in your love towards one another. 19, do not steal. Be content. Be grateful for what God has blessed you with. Ephesians 4:28, let the thief no longer steal, but rather let him labor, doing honest work with his own hands so that he may have something to share with anyone in need. So instead of stealing, give would be the opposite of that Paul points out. Don't bear false witness, verse 20. So this is a big one, right? Remember the story of Naboth in his vineyard Ahab threw a fit because he didn't get the vineyard. So how did Jezebel get Ahab his vineyard that belonged to Naboth? You remember? Exactly. You get let's have at least two or three guys to tell a lie on what Naboth did, but really didn't do, and then Naboth was killed. Not good to put an innocent person to death. Jesus' trial, remember that, where people are trying to make up lies about what he did, but no two of them could agree with their lie. So they were trying to bear false witness, but couldn't do it. Verse 21, I'll try to get through this. You shall not covet. How do you know if someone is coveting? This is more of an attitude, is it not? The others are kind of more of an action. Can you tell if someone's really coveting? Not really, right? If it's pretty obvious, I guess you could. You could probably have a good suspicion, but you could be wrong. I could be kind of longingly looking at some. I'm really not coveting. I'm just kind of so that's an inward. That's an inward attitude. But that is really the root problem of so many of the other commandments. So be content with what you have. Notice the order of these. It's these six. It starts with life, value wife. Just happened to rhyme. If you're, I guess, value your spouse, maybe a better one, right? Because it could switch. Then it goes to your goods, speaking against someone, and then your attitudes against them. So there may be kind of a maybe degression there, starting with life. Looking at all of them, it starts with God, and then it moves on to your family, honor your father and mother, life, marriage, material goods. So kind of, again, kind of a descending order. All of these commands are vital. And form the basis of God's commands. I think I got about 30 seconds, so I'll try to cover these real quick. So Moses reminds them, kind of at the end of this speech, what happened at Mount Sinai. He reminds them again, seeing the greatness, the majesty of God. He tells them the response of those who heard God. They wanted Moses to talk to God, let them, you know, just tell us what to do. They're afraid of dying if we hear any more. So basically Moses said, we need to gain that sense of awe and respect of God. When we read God's word, that's how we need to read his word. This is the word of God. And we can read the words that he spoke through his prophets, apostles. God's reaction, we covered this 28 to 30. Notice his wish. This is God's wish in verse 29. I'll read that for you. Oh, that they had such a heart as this always, to fear me and to keep all my commandments, that it may go well with them and with their descendants forever. That's what God desires, that they would always have this fear of me in them. So return to your tents. And then 31 and 32 is Moses' last admonition, kind of to wrap up 4 and 5. Don't go to the right or left. Be careful to obey. And secondly, obey God's law and live. And the longer you do that, the longer you'll be able to stay in Canaan. And that's what he started with, right? Chapter 4, beginning of chapter 4, that's what he ends with, chapter 5. So it's kind of a neat two chapters there. I know you're out of time for any comments, but anyone bold enough to make any comments? Not after how I did that, right? Okay, thank you very much. Lord willing, we will look at chapter 6 for next week.